Good afternoon, and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California in honor of World Environment Day. The United States General Assembly established World Environment Day in 1972 to stimulate awareness of the environment and to enhance political attention and public action. I am John Diaz, editorial page editor of the San Francisco Chronicle, and your chair and moderator for today's program. Today's program is co-sponsored by the Sierra Club, Sierra Magazine, and SF Green. We also welcome our listeners on the radio and thank the Gordon and Betty Moore Foundation for their generous underwriting of our radio broadcast. Today's program is entitled Urban Transportation Solutions for the 21st Century. In keeping with a major theme of World Environment Day, the program will focus on problems of traffic, congestion, and other transportation issues in the U.S. and worldwide, and how to effectively plan for the future. I'm now pleased to introduce our panel, consisting of two U.S. mayors, a former international mayor and transportation authority, and a transportation specialist with the Sierra Club. First, to my left, is Greg Nichols, the mayor of Seattle, Washington, where he first took office in 2002. He views public transit as a top priority of his administration, and he is a champion of smart growth policies. He has pushed forward a new light rail system, the design of a new monorail line, and an expansion of his city's streetcar network. Heather Fargo is the mayor of Sacramento, California, where she was first elected in 2000. She, too, sees public transit as a major issue and is particularly concerned with making her city, more walkable and bikeable, in addition to focusing on the relationship between land use planning and transportation. Jamie Lerner is the former three-time mayor of Curitiba, Brazil, and twice governor of the Brazilian state of Paraná. Mr. Lerner is a world-renowned architect and urban planner who has received numerous international awards for having transformed the public transportation system in his country, notably through the establishment of a bus rapid transit system. And finally, John Holtzclaw is an engineering physicist and urban planner who serves as the Sierra Club's senior policy advisor for its Building Healthy Communities campaign. Dr. Holtzclaw analyzes transportation and land use issues and their environmental, economic, and social impacts, both here in San Francisco and the state of California. Let me begin by asking each of our panelists to make an opening statement, discussing briefly the transportation challenges in his or her geographic area and how you feel they translate to challenges generally confronting all of us. Let's start with Greg Nichols, the mayor of Seattle, Washington. Greg?
Thank you, John. Thank you. Thank you. It is a great pleasure to be here this afternoon. I want to thank the Commonwealth Club, the Sierra Club and Magazine, and San Francisco Green for allowing us this opportunity to address this issue. In Seattle, we always admire San Francisco. We believe it's one of the two most beautiful cities in America. And we share a tradition that I learned this week. In Seattle, we enjoy lying about our weather. We tell people it rains all the time, it's dreary, it's gray. Not true. And I'm finding out that San Franciscans, when they talk about fog and cold and damp, perhaps are stretching the truth as well. So it's been a wonderful couple of days here, and I look forward to the rest of the program. Seattle is a remarkable city. Now, as mayor of Seattle, you'd expect me to say that, and let me back that up with a couple of bits of background. We're a mid-sized American city, about 570,000 people. We're growing. We're turning around a trend of shrinking that started in about 1960. We are a city that has a very diverse economy, and we are a city that probably has had more effect on the world than our size would indicate. If you think about Bill Boeing and his decision to build airplanes in Seattle that led to the 707 and the jet age, which shrunk the world. If you think about Bill Gates and Paul Allen and their decision to develop software and helped inaugurate the information age, which, again, shrunk the globe. And perhaps most remarkable of all, the people at Starbucks who figured out how to charge $3 for a 50-cent cup of coffee, and we now stand in line to participate in that. It's a very creative city. And we value that. We value our interaction with the world. We are the most trade-dependent city in America, and we have 21 sister cities around the globe that we enjoy strong relationships with. And so as I became mayor in 2002, there were a number of challenges. One, looking outward was not necessarily where America was. Attack of September 11th had occurred 8 weeks to the day before my election. Our Boeing company was in the midst of laying off 30,000 people in commercial airplane manufacturing. And during that time, we went from the second worst traffic in America to 17th, something I take full credit for. But it was because our economy was stopping. And so we've been looking at how do we use our transportation system and create a transportation system that will support this very outward-looking and engaging economic life that we have. And what are the next things to look forward to in our economy? We are in the midst of trying to catch up with the rest of America. San Francisco has its very, very treasured historic cable car. We tore ours out years ago, although we still find pieces of it when we're fixing our streets. We lost our interurban transportation rail system in the 1930s, as did much of America. And in 1968 and 70, we failed to pass measures to build a mass transit system. So one of the very first things I did as an elected official in my old life as a county council member was to sponsor an initiative to create a light rail system. And it was only 2 years ago, after 15 years of work, that we broke ground. But by the end of this decade, we will have opened up a light rail system from our downtown to our airport. We will have opened up a monorail system connecting our southwest portion of the city through downtown to our northwest portion. And we will have opened up a new streetcar for the first time in many, many years. We will also have begun a couple of other things that will affect our transportation system. First, a center city strategy that relies on encouraging residential growth in our downtown to go with what is a very healthy job center. So that, like many cities that have gone before us, we will have a good balance of jobs and residents, and we will have people using their feet in order to get to and from work. And then finally, the 800-pound gorilla that I'm facing is much like San Francisco. In 1989, your earthquake damaged the Embarcadero. In 2001, an earthquake damaged the Alaskan Way Viaduct, a twin to the Embarcadero. And we will, in the next few years, be removing the Alaskan Way Viaduct from our waterfront and replacing it probably with capacity underground in a tunnel. These are huge undertakings that we are in the midst of, but we believe they are absolutely essential to having a healthy city, good transit, good walkable downtown and center city and neighborhoods, as well as capacity to move some of the goods and services that allow that economic community I described to function. So I'm looking forward to your questions, and again, thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to address you today.
Thank you, Mayor Nichols. Now we'll hear from Mayor Heather Fargo from Sacramento, California.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much first to the Commonwealth Club, to the Sierra Club, and to all of you in the audience for being here today to pay attention to us and to help celebrate World Environment Day. It's very important that we take time and that we as mayors focus on what we can do within our cities to help improve the environment in the world. That is part of what we do as mayors and part of what we're going to be talking about today as it relates to transportation, to air quality, to land use planning. Sacramento, as most people know, is the state capital of California. Geographically, we're a little different from Seattle and San Francisco in that we're pretty flat, which makes us very bikeable and very walkable and pretty easy to get around. We're in the Central Valley. We're at the hub of a number of things. We're at the confluence of two major rivers. We're at the beginning of the Transcontinental Railroad and the hub of Amtrak and other corridors going north and south and east and west. And we're also at the intersection of several interstate freeways. So a lot of things come together in Sacramento, and obviously that's where the governor and legislature hang out as well. So we have an interesting relationship in our city with the state government and beyond in terms of the actions that we take and where we go. The city of Sacramento itself has about 450,000 people, and we are in a region that has about 2 million people. We anticipate in the next 50 years that doubling. And we're looking at both the city increasing in size as well as the region increasing in size. And that, of course, gives us both opportunities and challenges in our older areas as well as in our new growth areas to do something which is going to be the right thing to do to both improve traffic congestion, to improve air quality. Sacramento, because we are downwind from the Bay Area in part and because of our geography and the inversion layers, we are rated usually in the top 12 in terms of smog and ozone problems in the nation. And so we have a lot of health-related issues related to that. And so the air quality issues that are associated with traffic congestion and with people driving alone in their vehicles is something which we're very concerned about. And it's a personal health issue for people as well as just the attractiveness of the city and being able to see the mountains and those kinds of things. So there's a clear relationship, I believe, between transportation, between air quality, and between land use planning. And part of what we are doing in our region is we have gotten together our Council of Governments, which is made up of six counties and 22 cities, and developed something called the Sacramento Region Blueprint. It's a regional land use plan which sets some edges and also helps us to look at infill, promotes compact development, what's commonly called smart growth, more transportation choices, more housing choices. And all of those entities have bought into that, and we're all now trying to implement that blueprint in order to, again, reduce traffic congestion and to improve air quality. And obviously we want to maintain the quality of life. One thing we have in Sacramento, which I think people especially here in the Bay Area may not know, is we have a lot of diversity, a lot of ethnic diversity in our city, a lot of diversity of all kinds in our city. According to Harvard University, we are the most integrated city in the nation, not just diverse, but actually integrated census tract by census tract. And so that's something we're very proud of, and it means we also have a lot of great restaurants. We are a growing area, and obviously that brings with it a lot of challenges. As a city, we have taken some measures because one of our goals is sustainability and livability. We have taken some efforts to right-size our vehicles, to use compressed natural gas in our bus system and in our vehicles, whether it's a garbage truck or a code enforcement vehicle or whatnot. We have something in Sacramento Valley called Spare the Air Day, where we encourage people to carpool or take transit. But overall, the personal choices that people make, and I hope that's something we discuss during this hour, is really key to the solutions of traffic congestions and air quality. What people choose to drive, how often they choose to drive, and whether they're driving alone or not is really a key component here. The commuting ratio in Sacramento, about 72% of the people in Sacramento drive alone, 16% carpool, 4% use transit, 3% walk, and 1.5% bike. We do have a light rail system in our city. We started in 1987. We now have about 30 miles. We have 37,000 daily riders. We have 67,000 daily riders on our bus system, and 1,200 which use our paratransit system, people who have disabilities. And the Capital Corridor, which, of course, connects the Bay Area to Sacramento, is also growing in ridership. It's the fourth busiest corridor, rail corridor in the nation and the fastest growing in the nation, and currently has about 7,300 daily visitors and 2 million per year. As we get into questions, one thing that I would like to talk about is our plans to expand our intermodal, kind of like the Transbay Terminal, where we would have buses and light rail and ultimately high-speed rail and everything coming in together. We currently have about 1 million people a year going through our station, our historic station in downtown Sacramento. We think we can increase that to about 15 million a year if we expand that intermodal. So that's one of our plans. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mayor Fargo. Now we'll go to Jamie Lerner, who is the former mayor of Curitiba, Brazil.
Thank you. I am very pleased to share this meeting with mayors, very important mayors, and John Holzklau. And I envy the mayors because the best time in my life was when I was a mayor. So, because we're dealing right with the quality of life. Every time when a country, a state, or a city, they want to attract investments, I would say what makes the difference is quality of life. And quality of life, mobility, has a lot to do with quality of life. So, doing and saying that, I would like that to say that I'm sure after almost 40 years of experience working with city, I spent all my life doing that, I'm sure to say that every city in the world can improve its quality of life in less than 2 years. No matter is the scale of the city, no matter are the financial resources. So, and there's another issue. We don't have to spend a lot of money to build very expensive systems. My belief is the future is on surface. With a very young team of architects, engineers, young professionals, we started the system in 1974. We started with 25,000 passengers a day. Now we are transporting 2 million passengers a day. And what is important is self-sustainable. There is no subsidies. When we realized a very high quality of public transport, not having subsidy with our income, the income we have in Brazil, there's a lot of work being done. And one thing is every time I had hard time to try to make people understand, yes, you can do it. Yes, it is possible to do it right now. And people, they are always saying, oh, we cannot take out two ways from our traffic, from our streets for cars. We need them. I try to say, don't pay too much attention for cars. The cars are like our mother-in-law. We have to have good relationship with her, but we cannot leave. She'll conduct our life. So this morning I went with my wife to an inauguration of the Hayes Green, Hayes with Octavia, where it was the freeway. So I think you should do, I couldn't have the chance to speak to the mayor, you should send the picture to all the cities there. They have freeways. And most of them are unnecessary freeways. So you could transform in beautiful boulevards like here in San Francisco you have in a very beautiful park. So I'm sure that to say that 99% is unnecessary freeways. And 1%, I'm not sure they are necessary also. A freeway is the fastest way to take your car from a jammed place to another jammed place. I had the chance to go with the mayor of Toronto. By the way, very good mayor, David Miller. He took me to the freeway. Listen, we're planning to probably to remove or, and so we were about 60 miles speed. Oh, that's fast. At the moment we had to leave the freeway, it took us 1 hour. So that means we cannot be obsessed by the car. When we started, there was a saying, only subways can solve a problem of mobility. I'm happy to know that every city here has or a light rail or a streetcar or BRTs. because I, just to give you a comparison, the city of New York, they are discussing the Second Avenue line for almost 50 years. And they'll start probably this year, and they want to finish this Second Avenue line in 2021. That means 70 years for one line, with a cost of $3.8 billion. And this line would not transport more passengers than the line of buses, double articulated buses, every 30 seconds that is they're running close to our house. That means you can transport more passengers through surface and faster and in better conditions. You don't have to go down, and you can have as good systems. You can have, as we have, 30 seconds headway, so you don't have to wait more than 30 seconds. And you can transport the same number of passengers, and it can be implemented in less than 2 years. So every time when I have this chance, I won't like to take too much time just to say, please, it's important to start. Don't sacrifice generations of building expensive systems. You cannot build a complete network right now. Most of cities have 3, 4, 5 lines of subways. Okay, it's okay, I have nothing against subways, but most of the cities, the trips are on surface, and you have to have very good systems on surface. This is one of the most, and you have to do it fast, because you don't have the money in every city in the world to subsidize the operation, because you're taking away money that is needed for social investments. So surface is the future. I'm trying to say do it fast. Try to improve more and more as we did, and start. Because sometimes many cities are waiting so much time to making studies. Sometimes you have to start to make studies to make it happen. And because we don't have all the answers. And one good answer is could be do it fast, do it now, and give a better quality of life to your people right now.
Thank you. Thank you, Jamie Lerner, former mayor of Curitiba, Brazil. And finally, let's hear from John Holzclaw, who's a senior policy advisor for the Sierra Club. Welcome, John.
Thank you, John, and thank the Commonwealth Club for sponsoring this. It's an honor for me to be here with Mayor Lerner and the other mayors. And I'm going to try to bring out some of the themes that have been running through the presentation so far. And I wrote it before I heard the presentation, so you'll see how whether the themes fit with what they said. The key to building really sustainable urban transportation is the residential neighborhoods. The most important thing for good transportation is the residential neighborhoods. If you build your neighborhoods so that they're very convenient, so that people can walk to restaurants and markets, walk to visit their friends, bike in transit for those longer trips, And then even if they drive, because things are closer, more convenient, they won't drive as far. So I'm going to use as an example North Beach, which is North Beach, Chinatown, and the three hills surrounding it, Telegraph Hill, Russian Hill, and Nob Hill. North Beach is approximately 100 households per residential acre, compared with most of suburbs, which are about 3 households per residential acre on the average. It means that the people in North Beach save 70 or 97% of the land from being developed. There are as many households on 3 acres of land in North Beach as in 100 acres in Sproul. So things are much more convenient. I live in that area and I have over 700 restaurants within 1 mile and even more markets. So it's very convenient. Now, many suburban areas or many sprawling areas don't even allow restaurants and markets in residential areas. The planning laws don't allow it. The zoning doesn't allow it. They're often a shopping center on the other side of the freeway you can't walk to. So walking is extremely important to getting people into transit, to getting people to where they want to go. In order to walk, you had to have good streets, good, pleasant walking environment. That means a gridded street pattern rather than just wandering streets. Gridded because you have alternative ways of getting where you want to get there, because you have many intersections, so the traffic has to slow down and you can cross the street easily. Narrow streets are important. Sidewalks on both sides of the street, broad sidewalks, weather protection, trees, awnings, bus shelters, buildings built out to the sidewalk so that you have interesting store windows to look in as you're walking by, so that you have to walk through a parking lot to get into your restaurant or your store. And you have to have good transit service. The average household in a North Beach area has 90 buses or rail cars within a quarter of a mile walking distance. It's very convenient. In Sproul, you're lucky to have one bus an hour, because it's extremely expensive to provide good bus service or good transit service in those areas. They're sprawled out. You'd have to go a long distance to get by a reasonable number of households. No one's riding them. The taxpayers complain about, and we don't make money on them. The taxpayers complain about empty buses running around. The transit planners in the U.S. tend to concentrate overwhelmingly on commute planning. 20 to 25% of our trips are commute trips. The rest, 75 to 80%, are all the other things that you do. Making those convenient, even if your commute trips are still as long, will decrease the amount of traffic and will improve your transportation situation. Well, if this is true, then North Beach should have a low level of driving. Compared to Sproul, the average person in North Beach owns one-third as many cars and drives one-fourth as much. If you look at Manhattan, which is even more of all this good stuff we've been talking about, the average Manhattanite has one-seventh as many cars and drives one-ninth as much as the average person living in Sproul. Well, I would not be doing my job if I didn't make some suggestions for the Bay Area. We have a BART system. We have Caltrain. We're going to have bus rapid transit. We're going to have stations for each of those. We should, as we grow, we should plan our growth so that we take advantage of those stations, have transit-oriented design around those stations, or smart growth, whatever you want to call it. Design areas like North Beach around those stations so that people can walk. Even the people who live in the present sprawling areas will have more interesting, more local business centers to go to, as well as the transit. We should have better pedestrian conditions. I mean, it is a disgrace that so many cars park on our sidewalks in San Francisco. You know, if you can't park parallel in the street in front of your sidewalk and get it off the sidewalk, then you probably shouldn't be driving. We should have more pedestrian and transit streets. We have very few in San Francisco. Curitiba has many more than we do. We need more bike lanes. We need free bike lanes across the bridges, all of our bridges. We need more traffic calming to slow traffic and make it safer for people. More parking, higher parking fees, higher parking fines, use the money to subsidize our transit, as well as improving local neighborhoods. And Don Shoup had an excellent article, op-ed, in today's Chronicle. And we need strong enforcement of our driving laws. Thank you.
Thank you, John Holtzclap. Senior Policy Advisor to the Sierra Club. We want to remind our radio audience that you are listening to the Commonwealth Club of California radio program in honor of UN World Environment Day. The subject is domestic and international transportation challenges. And our panelists are Greg Nichols, Mayor of Seattle, Washington, Heather Fargo, Mayor of Sacramento, California, Jamie Lerner, former mayor of Curitiba, Brazil, and John Holtzclaw of the Sierra Club. And I'm John Diaz, editorial page editor of the San Francisco Chronicle. Let me start the questions by asking about the role, especially since we have three people who have been very involved in elective politics, the role of political leadership in these kinds of decisions. Mayor Fargo, you talked about that a lot of these things come down to personal choices, getting people to get out of their car or to not be a solo rider. I noted with some interest Jamie Lerner's comment about your relationship with your car should be like your mother-in-law. Well, I dare say here in California, that's a rather difficult concept. Most people think more fondly of their car than their mother-in-law. So it takes some political leadership. And I want to start by asking this question of Jamie Lerner, because speaking of political leadership, shortly after he became mayor of Curitiba back in 1971, he decided he wanted to put a pedestrian mall downtown, which I understand a lot of the shopkeepers objected to, until suddenly one weekend you sent the crews down and they tore it up and made it a pedestrian mall. Generally here in San Francisco anyway, we require a little more process to do things. But Jamie, maybe you can start by talking about what you see as the role of political leadership into getting to people to make these kinds of lifestyle choices that are oftentimes the foundation of the kinds of changes that John Holtzclaw was talking about a minute ago. Jamie?
Okay. Doing things very fast is not having discussions, not having participation from the people. So when there is a proposal, and I always try to say, if you want to commit people, if you want to make it happen, first of all, you have to propose a scenario, an idea, a project that everyone understands, or the large majority, they understand it is desirable. They'll help you to make it happen. But you cannot have consensus. You cannot just wait in the room, okay, you're fantastic, we're going to do everything you want. Democracy is a process of conflicts. So we have to deal with these conflicts. But sometimes we have to make it very fast. So discussing, having, it's participation, it's starting a game. Sometimes it's you that you'll start the game. Sometimes it's people. And back and forth, you have corrections of some ideas. It's like, for instance, giving a concert. So you're playing the violin and you're looking, and the audience, or probably 20% of the audience, they are not liking. So you won't start. You won't stop your concert and say, why you don't like my music? So you have to finish the concert, and after they'll say and ask them, oh, did you like? If you don't like, we can change it and we can improve it. And that's how it is. Sometimes you have to make it fast. Why? First of all, to avoid bureaucracy, your own bureaucracy. your own bureaucracy. Second, to avoid some political problems. Sometimes the governor is against the mayor. It's sometimes you have to have a fast decision. The third question is the third issue, which is more important. You have to be fast to avoid your own insecurity. Because sometimes you have a good project and you're trying to say, oh, it's not going to work. And so you decide to quit this idea and you had a good project. So make it fast. Don't be so prepotent to wanting to have all the answers. So the start is very important. The people, they will correct you. It's a daily work of a mayor. And speaking also about mobility, I would like to say, every system is important. Subways, buses, BRTs, light rail, bicycles, very important. So my feeling, and taxis, my feeling is we have to achieve to another dimension of mobility, which is having all of them working integrated, but with one condition. Don't dispute, don't try to have to use the same space. This is one of the most important issues. As long as you don't using the same space. Because if you have one of the systems, every system has to help another one. So, transport is also related to the structure of growth of a city. Transport plays a more important role than just only transporting people. It has to do with inducing urban growth, making a structure of living and working together, which is very important. You cannot just living here, working here, so you have to have everything integrated. And at the end, I would say, again, do it fast.
Okay. Mayor Heather Fargo of Sacramento, talk about the role of political leadership in trying to persuade an electorate that in many cases may be very satisfied with the kind of car-based, inefficient planning model that John Holzclaw described.
Well, actually, I think there are often times when the electorate is ahead of the elected. And so sometimes it's a matter of us catching up with public opinion, not necessarily us defining public opinion, although that is clearly the role of the mayor as well. A lot of the public agenda, a lot of the public discussion is set forth by the mayor and by the issues and ideas that the mayor and the elected members of our city council bring forward. So, and part of that is a process of educating the public. It's important to educate people on the impacts of air quality. It's important to educate people on the world environment issues associated with very consumptive vehicles that people choose to drive alone. I think part of the role of the mayor is to set an example, to be a role model. For example, I was almost late today because I took BART. And it took twice as long as the schedule said it was going to be, but I took it, and that's how I got here today. I only drove part of the way, and I carpooled at that. And part of it is to involve people in the decision-making and to remind them that the roles that they have as individuals and the role that we have collectively together. For example, very few people that I grew up with did anything but walk or ride their bikes to school. Very few children today walk their bikes to school in most American cities. They're driven by their mother. Mothers today drive twice as much as mothers did 10 or 20 years ago. because they're afraid their children are going to be unsafe. So part of the role of the mayor and of the city is to make sure that there are sidewalks, that there are crosswalks and traffic signals, that there are, in fact, safe ways for children to get to school, let alone for seniors to get around and for other people. So certainly part of it is the commute angle and putting the mechanisms in place, whether it's transportation management agencies or making sure that your the engineers in your public works department understand the importance of walking and the importance of making it safe to walk, as well as getting people home quickly from the commute.
Mayor Greg Nickels, you're certainly making a concerted effort to expand public transit options in Seattle. Is this a matter of responding to public demand, or are you having to do some salesmanship out there?
Well, it's I think your question about political leadership, John, is absolutely on the mark. In 1988, as a brand new, young, and somewhat naive member of our county council, I co-sponsored a question to the voters: should we develop a light rail system, remembering that 20 years before it had been defeated. And we've been working on that ever since. In effect, my election in 2001 was a referendum on whether to continue to pursue that light rail project or not. I spent that year in the election basically with the words light rail stapled to my forehead by my opponent. And it was a real question of whether to stand up for what I believed was absolutely necessary for our transportation future or not. And I stuck with it. We've broken ground. And once that first line is in place, I have absolutely no doubt that additional lines will be built. And Mayor Lerner, I hope very quickly, much more quickly than this initial groundbreaking took.
You've all touched on the role of providing incentives to get people to make these kinds of choices and to go to public transit. A question from our audience deals with disincentives, and that's the role market pricing could play in trying to get people to change their habits. For example, if you want to drive in downtown San Francisco during rush hour, you should have to pay dearly. Let's start with John Holzclaw of the Sierra Club. What do you think of that idea?
I think you do.
I'm sure this will be a very popular opinion. First, I think you need to look at the subsidies we already make to our auto use. We have on the Sierra Club website a summary of 8 subsidies that were done mostly in the early 90s and mid-90s, looking at how much we subsidize our driving. They all came up with a total that ranged between $3 and $7 per gallon of gas equivalent. Some of them are free parking, as Don Shoup talked about in the op-ed today. Others fighting wars to keep the gasoline flowing. All kinds, air pollution, things like that. The costs that health costs and crop losses and things like that from air pollution. Average of $5 per gallon of gas. So when we start talking about increasing the parking, which costs the city a lot to provide, we talk about, or the shopping center or whatever to provide that free parking, when you start talking about increasing the parking pricing, that's a pricing policy that we need, and knowing that we're being subsidized and it costs makes it easier to explain that to the public. Our fines, you know, if you put somebody at risk by driving erratically, driving unsafely, the fine should be fairly high. You run a red light, forget it. I mean, they don't even arrest you around here. That should be a fine, should be highly fined, should be arrested. We need to enforce our traffic laws and increase the cost of driving, because now the other people are paying for it. The public, the people who buys it at the shopping center but don't drive there are having to subsidize, the low income are subsidizing the people who drive.
It's probably easier for the Sierra Club or editorial writers, for that matter, to talk about punitive measures for driving. Let's hear from the elected officials. Would any of you like to dive into the value of disincentives, market forces?
Mayor
people
Fargo, go ahead.
I'd be happy to.
Mayor Heather,
I think people,
Heather Fargo, Sacramento.
I think people do pay a price when they drive in congested commutes. I mean, they pay a price with their health, with their stress level, with their anxiety, let alone with their time. If you can live closer to where you work, if you can keep your commute shorter, if you can carpool and have someone to visit with, even if you are stuck in traffic, it improves your quality of life. It makes you feel better at the end of the day. So I don't know how you'd actually charge somebody. I don't know. I mean, I can't imagine the toll booths set up all over a city to charge people for driving during that time of day physically. But I do think there is a toll which is taken on people that choose to do that.
Mayor Greg Nichols?
Well, in a purely theoretical sense, let me speak to this. I think the first step, and this is the vision that I have for Seattle, is that you provide the alternatives. You provide the light rail, the monorail, the bus transit, the streetcar, for people to be able to have mobility without the automobile. Because today, as was pointed out, our land use patterns have been created around the automobile. And I would liken it not to my mother-in-law, who I love dearly, but to heroin. It's pretty hard to get off of it. And so you need to provide the alternatives first. And then I think gradually you put the squeeze on it. In our city, we have had a land use code that's requires developers to put more parking in than the market actually demands. And we're eliminating those parking requirements, or at least I proposed it, and I think I'll have the votes on the city council to eliminate those so that you could build a new multi-use structure in our downtown and or our urban centers without providing parking. That will, in turn, force people to consider the cost of parking, because there are two great oxymorons in transportation, rush hour and free parking. There's nothing free about parking. It also will help us bring down the cost of housing. Parking space is about $25,000 to provide. And so we think that there are a lot of ways for you to send that price signal. And ultimately, rather than toll booths, you're going to have a system where different parts of the system are electronically deducting from a card you'll have in your car the price of using that particular facility.
Jamie Lerner, did you have to provide any disincentives to get people out of their cars in Curitiba?
Yes. I agree. I agree what is said by the mayors. We have to have always a better alternative. It's not trying to have penalties. You have to provide a better alternative. If the people, they understand they have a better alternative, they would use it. In our city, in Curitiba, we have 25% of people, they moved for public transport. And that they have cars and they moved for public transport because they realize in their routine itinerary it's a better alternative. So can you imagine all the cities in the world, cities, like San Francisco, here you have good systems of transport, but let's say any, say, Istanbul or Mexico cities with less than 25% of cars running in the streets. So when you have better public transport, the city became better for people and even for the cars. But one penalty we should give is for complexity sellers. There's a lot of complexity sellers all over the world. They're trying to tell you that the city is so complicated and the city is not so complicated as this complexity sellers, they want to give us this idea. And we should beat them with slippers. Because every time when you have a simple solution, they're trying to make it very difficult. Because I realize the people, they don't like, it's hard for some decision makers to have simple solutions. Because if it's so simple, why I didn't thought it before? And if it's so simple, there's no big public works. So you can make a deal. Okay, you want to make public works. So invest less in the building and provide more schools, provide more healthcare facilities. With this money, you'll have the public works. So my feeling is the great difficulty is making people, it's communication. You have to teach, my idea is teaching the children, always. Teach them how to design their own city. If they'll design it, they understand it better. They'll respect it better. And there's, well, we have one of the highest rates of separation of garbage. We started teaching the children in the schools for 6 months, and the children, they teach their parents. So everything has to be done, communicate through the children. And so, because we are teaching the children traffic lights, everything, we're not teaching the city. Is the car's religion. I would like to say I have nothing against cars. Most of my friends, they have cars, and including my wife. But you have to understand that for routine itineraries, you have to provide good alternatives. And for leisure, okay, they'll have it.
I want to remind our radio audience that you are listening to the Commonwealth Club of California radio program in honor of UN World Environment Day. The subject is domestic and international transportation. A number of our audience questions dealt with the sometimes conflicting pressures between environmental concerns and business interests. This one I thought particularly went to the point, and that is, isn't traffic congestion good? Isn't congestion a sign of a healthy economy and efficient use of roadways? And also, isn't congestion the thing that encourages people to use mass transit? Let's start with Greg Nichols, the mayor of Seattle, Washington.
Absolutely. Congestion should not be seen as an enemy, but as a friend of urban places. It is an opportunity to get people to look at alternatives, and the minute, of course, you get rid of congestion, people often will return to old ways. So it is not a matter of eliminating congestion. That would probably indicate that your economy has just died. It is a matter of learning to work with that congestion and use it as a way to shape your urban form and encourage people then to walk and bicycle, use your transit systems, and that congestion is a tool for you to get there.
Mayor Heather Fargo of Sacramento, California, your perspective on congestion is good.
I would agree with that. Congestion does, in fact, encourage people to do something other than being caught in congestion. The other corollary to that is parking. I've often said that downtowns that don't have a parking problem are downtowns you probably don't want to be in. So you shouldn't be so concerned that there's a parking problem downtown. You really need to be concerned if you don't have a parking problem downtown. Because it really is a sign of economic health that people want to be there. People want to be where you are, and that's a good thing. The bad side of congestion, of course, is that it creates air quality problems, not only other health problems, but it creates air quality problems. And so it is something that we try to fix and try to deal with. I'm not sure it's ever completely fixable. But part of the issue that we have throughout our cities and throughout the way we've built in America, or at least in California, so focused on serving the automobile, is that we've utilized an awful lot of our land space and an awful lot of our resources for very wide roads. And so for those roads that are congested, clearly we didn't overbuild them, but we have an awful lot of very wide suburban streets that never will be congested, but, you know, attract heat and put off fumes, and it's also a problem.
John Holtzclaw, something tells me you really want to weigh in on this one, since you were earlier talking about the value of density in planning.
Yes, I agree with what the two mayors have said. But Mayor Livingston in London was fed up with the congestion in downtown London, which was slowing the traffic and was discouraging people from walking. So they imposed, I guess about 4 years ago now, a 5-pound, which is now worth about $9, to enter downtown London. You have to pay that. And it has reduced traffic 30 or 40%. The buses run faster. It was opposed by many of the merchants, the merchants' organizations, because, you know, the downtown without all these cars would fall apart. I found out that people driving by don't look in store windows and don't shop. People walking by will see something and come in and shop. So that it actually helped the economy downtown. So now most of the merchants are in support of it.
We're starting to run a little short of time, but I want to give each of our panelists a chance to give their parting thoughts of 30 seconds or so of some of the subjects that we touched on today. Let's start with Jamie Lerner, the former mayor of Curitiba, Brazil. Mayor Lerner?
Okay. We're having here a meeting about very important meeting all of regarding the environmental concern. Sometimes there is that kind of saying, oh, there's nothing to do because there's the earth warming, ozone layoff. Yes, you can do a lot. If I could say in very simple words, you can help environment with three simple things. One, use less your car. Second, separate your garbage. Third, live closer to your work. If every citizen in its own city could do this, we certainly won't have any global big problems, or at least very diminished. The other issue is trying to understand that we have to deal more and more with mobility in different ways. That means if you want to use, you have to have a door-to-door service, you'll take in the very next future. You'll take your taxi, it will drive you to the closer station of the public transport. Why he should do it? Because he will be a partner of the system. And you can take with your bike, a portable bike, it can be designed as a suitcase, and you can take every kind of improvement on the design. You have a smart mobility. If you want to go by car close to the parking lots, you'll drop your car and you'll take a van, but you have to pay more for your mobility. So I think this is one of the issues that has to be studied very profoundly for the future.
Thank you, Jamie Lerner. Mayor Heather Fargo, Sacramento, California. Your final thoughts?
Thank you, and thanks again for this forum. I guess my final thoughts are that transportation really does affect people's quality of life, whether they're in congestion or whether they're affected by the air quality impacts. The land use decisions that elected people make, that communities make, affect transportation, mobility, and air quality issues, and we need to, I think, keep that in mind. I think we also need to think about where we're willing to put our resources. Funding is necessary to make these things happen. Public transportation doesn't just happen alone. We need federal, state, and local funding to make it happen. And at the federal level, I would certainly ask people to help us in saving Amtrak. It is kind of on the blocks at the federal level, and we need to make sure that we have the interstate connection that Amtrak offers. And many of our local systems would be harmed by Amtrak losing its funding. That's also true at the state and local level, so I hope people will pay attention to that. And then lastly, pay attention to the land use decisions that people are making, because those decisions about new neighborhoods and about whether infill takes place or not affects transportation and affects our ultimate mobility, our air quality, and our quality of life. Again, thanks for the opportunity to just be here.
Thank you, Mayor. Greg Nichols of Seattle, Washington.
Thank you. Thank you again for the opportunity to be here and engage in this conversation. I'm very honored to share this dais with these very distinguished panelists. I think the first issue is that you define the kind of city that you want to live in. And once you define the kind of city that you want to live in, the transportation system are the tools for you to help achieve that. The transit systems, what kind of transit system, where does it go, and how you charge for use of different parts of the transportation system. I'd like to echo something that Mayor Lerner said, and that is that consensus is vastly overrated. I think San Francisco and Seattle probably share a penchant for process. But at the end of the day, when you've had the public conversation, it's time to make a decision and move forward. And I wish we could move forward as fast as Mayor Lerner urges, but it is critical that people understand there will be a decision made and actions will be taken. And then something that Mayor Fargo said, and that is that people are often ahead of the politicians on these issues, and that is absolutely true. And so the issue of political leadership is simply one of being willing to listen to the people and move forward. And I think if you have that combination of political leadership that's in tune with what the people are thinking and the courage to move ahead with the different pieces and decisions that are required, cities in America and elsewhere will be successful.
This has been a terrific discussion. Please join me in thanking today's panelists, Mayor Greg Nichols of Seattle, Washington, Mayor Heather Fargo of Sacramento, California, Jamie Lerner, former mayor of Curitiba, Brazil, and John Holzclaw of the Sierra Club. Thank you all very much. Today's program was co-sponsored by the Sierra Club, Sierra Magazine, and SF Green. We also thank the Gordon and Betty Moore Foundation for underwriting this evening's radio broadcast. And now, this meeting of the Commonwealth of California, celebrating more than 100 years of enlightened discussion, is adjourned. Thanks, Senator. You guys are great. That's,